This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Ayala Hegarty,
Andy Asquith,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now we've been talking in the last session about some of the review of local government, but there's been various moves in different areas with this current Labour government that seems to be centralising a lot of things, reducing the number of DHBs, new proposals with water, and so on. Is this a process that you see happening here?
One of the things about New Zealand that we don't hear much about is that when you look at the nations in the OECD, New Zealand is the most heavily centralised of all those countries.
It's one of the smallest as well for population.
It's one of the smallest, but it's also the one that's got the highest degree of centralisation. Years ago in Britain, I remember reading something about Margaret Thatcher having a greater centralising thrust than Stalin had in Russia. But New Zealand sort of passes that. And the reform of the DHBs, the current water reforms that are taking place, and the potential reform of local government is all taking things from the locale and placing it in the hands of Wellington.
Okay, so New Zealand's low population isn't a factor in that? The fact that maybe a city in Australia has the same population as New Zealand as a country?
Well, I don't think so. If you look at the comparison that I would make with somewhere like Denmark, which is heavily decentralised, mm-hmm. with local government running many functions, including health, education, mm-hmm. things that in New Zealand aren't likely to happen. Now, local government New Zealand...
Well, we just come to the stage of moving away from, was it 2021, district health boards?
Exactly, we're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, but did it work with 2021 district health boards?
Well, I wouldn't say that it did work, but to say that the answer is centralisation is, in my view, a step in the wrong direction. Local government New Zealand is having a big drive on something that's called localism. This is an international agenda, and the idea is that more services, more functions should be devolved from central government into the hands of locally elected representatives.
Buying from a central pool, as you were saying in our previous recording?
Well,
the purchaser provider split up.
It's not that at all. It doesn't really matter in a generic sense who provides the services, but it's the local determination of what that service should be that's important.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that councils or a similar local body that's elected represents the locality and has got its feet on the ground in a community.
And has control over the funding?
I suppose ultimately, yes, because they would, on a local level, they would determine what the service level should be, what service should be provided.
There's no central government guidance as to what the standards should be, so they're not saying this region, what's it like the health lottery, what treatment you get depends on where you're living in the country?
Well, one of the things that could be factored in that could be a minimum service level that a particular council has to have. But I'm not in any sense advocating a uniform service across the country because, the needs of Palmerston North are different from the needs of somewhere like Remuera in Auckland, for instance. But the idea is that local people with local knowledge are best served to determine local service needs.
Okay, but you've also questioned the ability of elected representatives to make those sorts of decisions.
Well, that's a different thing altogether. If you go, one of the reasons why localism is doomed and was never ever going to succeed was because essentially central government is essentially suspicious of local government and local government's ability to do things. And until local government realises and accepts this and then makes fundamental steps to correct this deficiency, there's not a hope in hell that central government will start to devolve services and responsibilities.
So how do they correct? They become more competent? You need more career local government?
Well, it does watch career local government, but you can, you know, if you look at... There are two ways in which councillors gain knowledge, development, training, education, call it what you want, when they're elected. The first one is each council will probably have some sort of induction process that's designed by the chief executive, and it essentially serves the chief executive's agenda. Now, I can name council chief executives that understand local government, support local government, local democracy, local voice, local choice. And if you cut them through the middle, you see local government would run through them. In a similar vein, I can point out chief executives that come from a corporate background in the private sector and are just doing a corporate job and see councillors as an occupational hazard and a hindrance.
A bit like a board of directors.
A bit like a board of directors. And they should be seen and not heard. And I've actually heard a chief executive say this. And I was gobsmacked. So that's the first way councillors may gain some training and development. The second way is after each electoral cycle, Local Government New Zealand puts on a sort of set of training courses. And these training courses are provided by former mayors and councillors. And the analogy that I use here is that most New Zealanders learn to drive from their parents. And their parents learn to drive from their grandparents. What that means is most New Zealanders have got their grandparents' bad driving habits. So you put this into local government context, and newly elected councillors and mayors are learning the mistakes of councillors and mayors two generations back. There is zero input from any university in New Zealand in this training process. And I could name five or six academics across New Zealand from different universities that could put together a proper bespoke training and development programme for councillors and mayors in New Zealand.
Now, I should mention here for anyone listening that Andy is an academic specialising in this area, so he's promoting...
But I did say I could name other Stuart. I'm very careful about this. I could name others. And we'll happily do so if LGNZ chose to... The problem is LGNZ is not bothered. Because they've got their head in the sand.
But the academic view as to how councillors should operate is going to give an effective practice manual for councillors.
If nothing else, it would give them a different point of view from which to approach what they're doing. A few years ago, I approached LGNZ because I came across an academic programme in the UK. Local Government New Zealand,
LGNZ.
LGNZ. A few years ago, I came across a programme put together by the University of Sunderland in the UK that was aimed at councillors, and it was a certificate for councillors to complete that would help to give them the right skill set for asking questions, for challenging, for fulfilling the roles that councillors have. And I went to LGNZ and said, look, here's something. And the response that I got was interesting. I was told, yes, we're aware of this, but most councillors don't see that they have a need for anything like this.
They might think they're already overloaded with the masses of papers they're getting from...
Well, no, the problem is, this goes back to the neoliberal model of government that we've had in New Zealand for the last 30 or so years. Your typical councillor will say, well, I've run my own business successfully, I know how to do these things. Now, that's got a fundamental flaw in it. The first one is that a business is not a council. A council is not a business.
Well, Trump had the same philosophy, didn't he, in America? The
Well, many politicians around the world have had that view. That, you know, the purpose of a business is to benefit a very small number of stakeholders. It's short-term profit maximisation for the benefit of few. On the other hand, a council is there for the community. It belongs to, is responsible to everyone in a community, to all stakeholders.
But this was one of the problems in some of the academic thing. What is the motivation of a councillor or an elected representative? And they're thinking they have to deliver within a very short timescale. So while you could say that the council or the central government has to take a long perspective, the individual elected representatives would probably feel obliged to take a very short-term perspective.
Well, this goes to something called public choice theory, which says that basically politicians are only motivated by winning the next election.
Well, they can't actually do anything if they can't win the next election. Normally, if you do something, then it's over to you're thrown out and overturned by the next group.
Well, this is a fundamental problem, isn't it? Because it takes a brave politician to make an unpopular decision. So within New Zealand,
it doesn't take a brave politician. It takes a brave team of politicians. So if a politician wants to do it, they have to get everyone else on board to back them in.
Yeah, but to start with, it takes one person to stand up. So the best example in New Zealand that I can think of is there is no politician willing to stand up and say, look, we must increase the pension age. And here's what we have to do. There's a whole host of people that recognise that's something that needs to be done.
None are saying it publicly. Perhaps some have floated it privately and found they would not get the support of their colleagues, so it would be political suicide for them to state it publicly.
But for the national good, it's something that has to be done.
Yes, but the only way it's going to, I mean, you were talking about an individual. I'm saying you need they need a whole group. In the same way as in an election, and we saw with local elections here, the questions were, if you were elected, what would you do? And the answers were all, if I was a dictator, this is what I would do. And one or two people said, well, actually, if I was elected, what can I get everyone else to agree to? Because that's the only way we'll actually get anything through. But you've been very quiet here, Iola, and you've had a lot of involvement in these issues.
I have, but I think part of what we're talking about is the public trust and confidence in local authorities. And this is what the government, was the local government review, is saying that they want to actually enhance. And I think both you and I, Andy, have been down the path of saying, well, how do you actually get public trust and confidence when there doesn't seem to be any strong leadership or any ideas that they have of governance or ethics? And in my view...
So ethics, you went to a university of ethics, didn't you?
Well, I think having been appointed to a government department in a particular role, and talking about educating counsellors, we had to do courses that were run by an accredited university to give us this training.
Absolutely.
Rather than having something being told to the law clerk come and telling me, now this is your job to do this and tick this box and then pass it back to me. And we argued some years ago that there should be a university course for counsellors.
Well, I don't want to say I told you so here, but there was a university in New Zealand that tried to put together...
Yeah, you tried to put together.
Well, I wasn't going to say it was me.
I can say it. You were driving it and hoped to get something accepted.
Well, it needs to be done.
Absolutely, and with the current review, there's all sorts of ifs here. But if the review runs its course, and if the minister's brave enough to implement all its recommendations, and if those recommendations are what they should be, what they ought to be. Read the paper that McNeil and I are going to publish shortly.
That's Jeff McNeil at that, yeah.
It should open the floodgates for this, because councillors must, you know, before councillors are even elected, they should be compelled to sit an idiot test at least.
Now I should say, you qualified yourself. You are actually, in about 10 days you're leaving and going to Australia, so you're not plugging your own course here.
But I think that there needs to be a level of professionalism amongst the councillors, and that's what
Careful about the word professionalism, but there has to be a level of competence. They have to demonstrate competence.
Okay, competence, capability.
Yep.
And gender diversity.
Clinical thinking. I really want to see some really good thinking from them.
Yeah, just asking the why question, not just accepting stuff at face value.
That's right. And I'm absolutely horrified about how they don't do their homework. They get presented with an idea from council officers. They seem to me, in my view, they swallow it holus bolus.
One of the things about Palmerston North that causes me great concern is I had a meeting earlier this year with one of my colleagues who's a property academic, and we were talking about, you know, the burning issue that is house prices in Palmerston North and what could be done. And he drew me a very, very elaborate diagram. And I said to him, just off the cuff, I said, I'm assuming that you've sat down with the city council and discussed this, haven't you? And he looked at me as I was daft. And he said, no, of course not. And one of the things that is quite distressing for me is that, and I don't think Palmerston North City Council is alone in this at all, but councils are reluctant to look outside their square. No pun intended there. Over the river, the city council has got an institution full of experts on a whole number of issues, and there is no exchange.
I keep telling the mayor that all the time.
Yeah.
That why aren't you using the expertise that's here? These people are actually ratepayers. It's in their own self-interest.
But yet
to get
they
the
will
right
spend
things happening.
It'd be interesting for someone to pose a question as to how much money has been spent on external consultants in the last year. That would be a really interesting one.
Yeah, but one of the points of consultants is you want to make an unpopular decision, but you don't want to be labelled with it, so you hire a consultant to recommend what you want.
Well, actually, in my view, what I've seen of consultancies in Palmerston North is that they're all in bed together. The council officers
say, that's exactly what I said.
It's a cottage industry. They feed off each other.
And I had a prime example of that, where something wasn't even in the documentation as to, but the mayor actually said, now this is what's going to happen. And immediately, within 3 days, there was something in the documentation to show that this was going to be happening. Yeah. Now, that's not consultation with who matter, and in my view, that's me, not somebody from a consultation firm whose wife and husband are.
Do either of you know about, at the moment, there's a large area of land marked out towards in the Karanga Bunnythorpe Road for expansion of new housing in Palmerston North, and that's, from what I hear, prime agricultural land. Do you know how that came to be designated for housing?
In a council meeting, I don't know, some months ago. Mm. Yes, and it was argued by a couple of councillors, but it is prime. But no, the development was going to go ahead. There is some concerns about who's actually going to be doing the development.
Mm.
But because sources tell me that there's plenty of expertise within the council to order, do the roading, the guttering and drainage and all those things, and they could do it for much, much less than what it is that they hire contractors.
Oh, you mean that? So they've got to the stage of working out, it's not just a proposal to for
it's
consideration,
it's
what they're going to go.
It's like a lot of things that, you know, we hear about.
So, I know people who used to live in that area and they suddenly see this thing on a map and think, where's that come from? So, but that raises another issue, though. So you talk about roads and so on, but we've had a lot of expansion in Palmers North recently, and people are saying, have you noticed all the increased traffic congestion? Why was there no provision made for that sort of expansion and development? Any idea?
Wasn't it in the 10-year plan, Andy?
I don't know. My thoughts are that it could be because you've got different agencies involved, and there's been a lack of coordination.
Well, between the council
between Palmers City Council, between Horizons, between the transport agency.
So that would affect internal things like Ruahini Street and the build-up of traffic down there at Kia.
Well, I think ultimately, if you're going to have activities that will increase the traffic on the road. Ultimately, it's going to be, you know, you talk about history. I got caught up in that when we were going into town last night. It was just nuts.
Yeah. Yes.
So this is really what.
But this is all stuff that could be anticipated. Is it a lack of long term planning here?
Lack of long term planning, which poses. I've had a couple of journalists contacting me about 10-year plans from councils around the country. One from Wellington this week about they went out and consulted, and then they inserted something afterwards that hadn't been consulted upon, and all hell broke loose, and they've had to retrospectively consult. And it's just a farce. The way that it's all done, it's to use a technical phrase from West Yorkshire, it's asked about face sometimes. But I do wonder in these circumstances, certainly in the case of Wellington, whether or not, but we're back to sort of politicians being bounced here, that in the last minute officers are inserting things that can cause embarrassment to politicians. And certainly in the case of Wellington, given the current climate, you know, I'm not surprised at all, because I know there's no love lost between the mayor and the chief executive.
But
this, as soon as this has been archived for 30 years, no one will hear it for then. I'm okay saying that.
Well, there's no clear answers, but of course, you know, these problems are going to be ongoing anyway.
I think some years ago I had a problem over at the park, and it was really difficult.
The park,
which is the local park, then it was named Waitotoe, now it's named Ahimati. But I couldn't actually get an idea who actually was responsible for, because there was Horizons for the river side to so many metres, then it was Palmers North City Council. But nobody actually could tell me, was it, who was actually in charge?
And this, you know, this feeds back into the daily discussion we had as well, as to sort of civics and people being engaged and knowing what's going on. And we've had people elected to council on the basis of, we'll stop the closure of post offices. In the last election, someone suggested to me that I stand, one of the things that I use was to do with buses, because that's an Horizons issue. I've come across lots of people that are convinced that the council runs a hospital, and if there's confusion there and people don't understand, then you know they become sort of less interested, because they're disengaged, and it just gets worse. But it's fine for the, you know, for the officers and things, because they're still there, they've still got jobs to do. And
so one of the issues though with all of this is you might think, how far is this going to affect me? So how much energy should I put into trying to understand it and contact people and persuade people?
Well, this is exactly why I'm going to Perth next week, isn't it?
Because disillusionment with things here.
Who'd
it's
have
going to be different in Perth,
who'd
because
have
people are different in Perth.
Who'd have thought local government give you concussion? Bang! Bang!
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.